Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
We begin by acknowledging the Gabigabi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast episode is being recorded today, and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and to their parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F-word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Well, you probably won't hear quite so much swearing among the beans, you know. Well, yeah. Not suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, peas and beans. Gary Bean here, in case you were wondering. I hope things are going okay for you this minute of this day. I know that it may not last more than a minute or two, but for the moment, I hope that the fact that you're listening means that you've been able to get a little bit of a break, or you're in the middle of doing a very big task that you can take your mind off by listening. So thank you for putting us in your ears right now. Look, I have to tell you, I have just come off the conversation that I recorded with today's bean, Kirk Thompson. Normally I record these introductions, afterwards. I have a think about the conversation, I take some notes, I decide how best to introduce it. This time I'm going to go straight into it because I'm quite full of emotion having listened to this conversation, and I thought maybe I could just put that in the introduction to let you know that this is a cracker of a conversation, whether you're a mum or a dad, whether it doesn't matter who you are. Anytime you get a chance to listen to somebody who's honest and self-aware and courageous enough to tell you things as they are, but who also demonstrates an ability to give things their all and find a way through what seems to have been an impossible labyrinth of darkness and despair or whatever. Every time you hear a conversation like that, it's going to affect you, right? It's going to change you. And this conversation I had with Kirk was like that for me. Every dad I have spoken to, I will say this, every dad I have spoken to, I have felt afterwards what an honour that was and how it has, you know, impacted upon me and been something that's made me think or helped me to understand something or to be a better person. This one was a cracker. You will find this next three quarters of an hour to an hour worth your while. So stay with it and listen to my conversation with Kirk Thompson, who is a dad of three daughters, Kirk and Tara Thompson. Tara is in the hangout. Many of you may even know her. Tara, thank you for contacting Mandy and saying that Kirk would be willing for the conversation. You're the one who got this started. And good on you for all that you do as a mum. You come up quite a few times in the conversation, and rightly so. So this is my conversation with Kirk Thompson, and I hope you find it as important and enjoyable and wise as I did. G'day, Kirk.
G'day, Gary. How are you going?
I'm very good, thank you, and this is really great. Thank you for making the time to talk to me. I know it's always something you have to fit in with everything else that's going on, so I greatly appreciate it. I think you're heading off to a medical appointment not too far into the future, in the next couple of hours, so thank you for putting this in here for us now. What I thought we could do is just get straight into it with the questions that Kate and Mandy ask, and that will get us started, and then we can talk about you and your family, okay?
Sure thing. Well, first of all, I just want to say, well, thanks for having me. So I appreciate you taking the time to get me on the podcast.
Yeah, no, it's great, mate. And thank you to your wife, Tara. Thank you, Tara, for making contact with Mandy and reaching out to us so that we knew that Kirk was interested. And so here he is, and I hope he doesn't say anything that he regrets later on.
I am still a husband, so I'm sure to say something.
It's almost compulsory, isn't it?
Absolutely.
All right, mate. So let's start with the music question. Anything you would like to recommend to either pick you up or calm you down?
Yeah, okay. I had a big think about this one. So I don't really have set genres in music, but I listen to a bit of everything. But I think if I'm looking for a pick-me-up song, maybe even like an amp-up song for a run or something, my go-to band that I always put on would be the Amity Affliction, who are sort of a heavy Australian act who are great.
Don't know them.
Yeah, yeah. And then a bit of a pick-me-up song or a perspective song I really like is one by Regina Spektor called Samson.
Samson.
Yeah, and it's basically a story about the Bible story or person Samson, who was that strong man with long hair and pushed down the columns, and she sort of writes in a way that he isn't actually anyone, he's just a man that falls in love, and there's nothing in the history books of the Bible about him. But it's just an interesting perspective song I've always loved from the first time I heard it, and it really just makes me think about, you know, in particular my wife Tara and what we have and how special it is. So they're sort of my two go-to songs or acts for different reasons.
Okay, now there's two things there I wanted to ask. So firstly, you're a runner, is that right?
I like to jog as much as I can. So it's a way that I like to clear the mind a bit and also try and keep on top of the fitness. I get quite bored doing like gym work and things, so I just try and, you know, put the music on and go for a bit of a run. Excuse me.
Yeah, okay. Good on you. And a great time to listen to podcasts or music is obviously when you're out and about.
It is, absolutely.
Now, Samson, that intrigues me. And you say you sort of identify or there's something about that that's meaningful to you. I mean, I guess those of us who are not biblically literate know about Samson and Delilah, and we know that she was a, you know, she cut his hair and so he lost all his strength or something because she was deceitful and he was foolish. Is that the way the story goes?
Yeah, look, I think so. It's been a long time since I've been at school studying the Bible. I did have a Catholic school upbringing, but I always liked two stories in the Bible as a kid, and that was the Samson story and also the David and Goliath story.
So tell us why Samson?
Oh, I don't know. I think the fact that he was imprisoned and he was down and out, and you know, they cut his hair off, meaning they didn't think he'd have any strength, and then he was still able to find the inner strength and push down those columns. To me, that just spoke to me. I think I've always been interested in things that you know, have a story of an underdog or someone who's underestimated, who's able to rise to the top. That song, I've always liked Regina Spektor. She's a really great American or Canadian, I'm not sure. She's a North American artist.
Yeah.
Really huge in the circles that know her and things, but not really that well known generally. You don't hear her on the radio and things very often, but she's actually a great artist. And, yeah, the way she's written that song, it really resonated with me, knowing that story as a kid and then, you know, knowing what it's like to be in love with someone and things like that. It's just one of those songs that always stuck with me from the first time I heard it.
You know, that's intriguing. I don't mean to make too much of it. I just think the things that do mean something to us are often interesting to contemplate. And, you know, this man who was able to overcome, as you say, he was downtrodden, misunderstood, in love. There are things there that maybe I just find fascinating, and I'm not a counsellor and this is not a counselling session. but that's why I asked. I just find that really interesting. All right, well, let's move on, because maybe we can unpack that thing a bit later. Like, I guess the question that's hovering in the back of my mind is, what does that say to you about what it is to be a man and to be a husband and to be a dad, you know, all those kinds of things? And it might be putting way too much, you know, importance on it. So let's move on for now.
Sure.
Before I go too far down that rabbit hole. So the second question then is, did you win any awards at school?
Oh, I didn't really. I was always a middle of the range student. You know, I enjoyed sport. I enjoyed studying, particularly history side of things. But I was never a world beater in any field. Mm-hmm. You know, I always did what I needed to do. I was never a bad student. I always was respectful. But, no, I was never a world beater in any way at school. You know, I think I enjoyed the social aspect of school more than any other. But, no awards came out of my schooling life.
Well, you don't need to, you know, feel bad about that at all. I mean, there are many of us. And, you know, I think the background to that question for Kate and Mandy is to do with that very fraught question about our children, our sons and daughters having schooling experiences and how awards these days do seem to be quite unlike what they were many years ago. So it just opens up a conversation there about something that can be quite painful or complicated. So, okay. Well,
yeah, and I guess that's a good point. I mean, nowadays the award system isn't like it was when I was at school. It wasn't participation awards 20 years ago. And before that, I think I finished school 20 years ago next year. So, you know, you earned the reward, the award if you were the best at it. Now that wasn't inclusive by any means. You had to be good at it to get the award, which did leave people out, but I think it sort of emphasized that point of being good at it or working harder to win the award. But in saying that, the kids that couldn't win the physical awards, they were winning the intellectual awards and, you know, the math awards and things too. Mm. So I guess those awards for everyone and every ability. However, I just wasn't good enough for any of them to win.
Well, you see, that's what it does though, doesn't it? I wasn't good enough to win the award.
But look, at the end of the day, I didn't try hard to win the award either. As I said, I played a lot of sport outside of school, which I was good at, inter-school sports and trying to strive to be the number one at anything didn't really interest me. As I said, it was a social thing. I liked to learn. You know, I think knowledge is power. So I think I appreciate that a lot more now since I've left school and I've done a degree and I love to read and learn, and particularly history stuff and self-improvement things. But, yeah, at school it just wasn't my thing. I was just happy to go with the flow and have a good time and learn as I went, and that was about it.
Yeah, so that sounds very balanced to me. And, listen, I would have a happy conversation with anyone who likes history, so that's a good point. All right, so let's move on then to the third one, which will lead us into our conversation. So why are you what is called a bean?
Yeah, so I'm a bean because I have my middle child, Willow, who was born with cerebral palsy and a later diagnosis of ASD, autism. Mm-hmm. So we had a bit of a turbulent birth experience with her, emergency C-section at 29 weeks from a hemorrhage. And that started our journey, a six-week journey in the NICU, where we learned, I think, about week four. She'd just gotten off her CPAP and all those machines and got out of the humi crib and, you know, we were on the highest of highs one morning and then get told that she had some grey area on the right, I think it was the rear right of her brain in a scan, and it meant that she was likely to have cerebral palsy and all these physical disabilities which she would carry with her the rest of her life. So that started our journey there. So she was about 4 weeks old. I guess I've been a bean ever since. However, I've only really learned about the bean network recently.
Yes, there's a garden full of us, mate. It's just we don't always show up. There's a lot of things that anyway, that's another story. So at 29 weeks, you say, now I'm having a little bit of trouble sometimes hearing some of your words. What was the reason for the C-section at 29 weeks?
Okay, so Tara, my wife, had a bleed. A serious bleed. So she had to get rushed to hospital and from there, they identified that I think it was a placental abruption or something like that, and that there was no way she had to come out basically straight away. So they rushed her into the operating theatre. It was quite quite confronting. You know, we had with our first one, we had a natural birth. However, she was a big girl who didn't want to come out, so they had to sort of pry her out. But So I was aware of what the operating theatre was like for that, but they didn't have to give her a C-section for the first one. Now, when we talk about an emergency C-section for a premature baby, we're talking like 15 people in the room. Like, it is intense.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed in the room, so I had to sit in the waiting area. So I had no idea what was going on. So it was a very scary, confronting experience, and there was really no time to be explained what was happening because it was like, we have to do this now. So to their credit though, the doctors at the hospital and the nurses, they were there. They're always fantastic. They were trying to explain it, but they couldn't allow us enough time to sit there and get our head around it because it was a matter of life or death at that point. So yeah, So that happened, and then she got whisked away basically instantly by the NICU ambulance from John Hunter up in Newcastle, and they took her straight up and put her up in the Humie crib. So, yeah, it was an interesting and very scary and confronting couple of hours. And then Tara and I spent the night at Gosford Hospital, and then we went up the next morning to see Willow for the first time.
Wow.
Mm, yeah.
That moment, or those moments when you're on your own, not knowing what's happening, and, you know, you have to trust everyone to know what they're doing, and you have so much at stake. You know, I do have some experience of that too, and will never, I think, get over that particular experience. How was Willow in those early days then?
Yeah, she was quite good. She was very strong. They were really impressed with how strong she was. So they had her on the CPAP for the first couple of weeks, which is the compressed air like mask system to help her, you know, just to take that strain from breathing off her so she doesn't tire out.
Yeah.
But she was a little rock star, you know. She kept kicking her goals really well. And we had a really, really positive, good 4 weeks in there until we got that news. So, unfortunately, it was delivered with about as much empathy as a sledgehammer hitting a wall, which is probably the most unfortunate part of it. And I wasn't even present when they told Taros.
Oh, really?
Which was, unfortunate, which was really sad. And, you know, I confronted Tara, or saw Tara running out of the NICU in tears, because I was walking up from where we were staying. So I was around. I'd been around the whole 4 weeks. But, unfortunately, the specialist at the time just decided to tell Tara quickly on the fly without me there. So
you're kidding.
So that was a really, you know, and I went up and saw the specialist after and sort of said, explain to me what's happening, because Tara can barely talk right now. And you know, let him know that I wasn't happy that he just dropped it on her by standing there by herself next to the crib. But, I mean, it didn't change anything at the end of the day. Whether I was pissed off or not, but, you know, I felt like I had to at least tell him that it was pretty inappropriate. But, so that's where our journey started from, I guess, going from what we thought was going to be the life that we'd planned, or the life that, you know, although we just had a NICU experience, everything seemed to be fine, that she was just going to be a premature baby and then develop, in a normal way with no issues or disabilities. But that's where our life sort of took a bit of a deviation, and we had to learn then how to do it that way.
Yeah. I mean, you said it probably didn't make much difference what you said to the specialist, but I tell you what did make a difference, and that's the fact that you were there. And as you say, you were there the whole time. And, you know, so good on you, mate, for showing up. Even just showing up is 80% of it sometimes, isn't it? So good on you for being there. How was Tara, like, after the bleed and so on, was she physically okay?
Yeah, she was physically okay. I mean, she had the C-section, so like any woman who's had a C-section, or any couple that have gone through a C-section with their babies know that it's a harder recovery for the women. Unfortunately, in the hospital, she got an infection, so she had to spend an extra 2 weeks on her back and barely been able to move. So that was really unfortunate and sad, because it meant that she couldn't just get up and sort of walk up to see Willow whenever she could, because she wasn't in the same room. Obviously, Willow was in the NICU, so they were separated. So it restricted her a bit there. So I think that really played on her a bit emotionally, because it was super hard for her to even sit up, but she wanted to get up in that wheelchair and get pushed up to see Willow as much as she could. But once she got through that, and once that healed up, she was fine. She's fine physically from that. Yeah.
Okay. You use the word rock star. Tell us about Willow. Who is this little girl? She's nearly eight now, is that right?
Yeah, so she's eight at the end of the year.
All right, so if we met her, who are we meeting? What does she like? What lights her eyes up? You know, what's this little girl like?
Okay, she is she's a blonde, very blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl who is extremely sassy and knows what she likes and knows what and who she doesn't like. She's very brutally honest, which I think, you know, that's part of a lot of people with autism, that they're very black and white and they don't have as much empathy there, which sometimes can be a bit confronting, but other times it's good because you know where you stand always. She loves to dance and sing. She loves The Voice, absolutely addicted to The Voice, the show. So that's taking over our lives at the moment since it's got another week left. And she doesn't quit, you know. She falls down a lot, as a lot of people with CP or any sort of physical disability do. They fall, but she always gets back up. So, you know, she's someone who's definitely opened our eyes up to what resilience means. And she's a lot of fun. Just don't annoy her. I think it's probably if you annoy her, she's going to let you know, and she'll probably wipe you for a good 5 or 10 minutes until she gets over it. So.
And what about with her sisters? How do they get on?
They get on great until they don't, and then it's World War III. she can be very manipulative and annoying. So she'll go into one of the sisters' rooms and just be like, "Oh, I want that," and she'll just take something of theirs, and then it erupts. And then she's got a beautiful heart on her. And the sisters, when they get on well, it's such a nice thing to see. But I think there's a combination of how Willow is with her, you know, very honest and very upfront nature, and then the fact that, you know, the other two girls are now 4 and 8 or 4 and 9, so they're just at that age where they're going to clash and fight anyway, and they're all girls. So it's a bit of a combination of all different factors coming in there to make when it erupts, it really erupts. Yeah.
And so you're the only bloke in the house.
Yes.
There's 4 of them, and there's you.
Yes.
How's that?
Yeah, look, it's interesting, but we've in the last year we've got a male dog, a little Staffy. So he's my boy.
Okay.
although before him we had a female Labrador for 14 years, so it really was me in a room full of, or house full of women. But look, it's fine. Look, I've always loved the idea of being a dad to daughters. You know, the fact that they'll always be their superhero. I'll always be the strongest man in their world, even though physically I'm not that big or strong. I like that. I like that they can, you know, they'll always go to mum for that emotional support and things, but I'll always have an important role to play in their life in a dad way, you know, in a male way, which I love. Look, the fights and things, yeah, I try and stay out of them as much as I can, especially if they're over girly stuff. And I know I'm in for a huge challenge, you know, in the next sort of 10 years or so, as those teenage years sort of come and different bodies change and things sync up. And look, I've already had a joke to Tara that I'm going to try and save some money and buy a little investment property or somewhere so I can go there 1 week a month and just have a bit of me time or something. But yeah, there's the reality of it all. But look, so far I love being a dad to a household of women, but it does have its challenges, no doubt.
That could probably be something you could argue a little more successfully if you knew, or if Tara knew, she could have a week there on her own each month as well, a different week.
Look, Tara and I, we've been pretty good communicating about that early since we had 3 girls, and when we got out, the house we're in now, it has a double garage. That was sort of my main item, was when we move and get a big house, I have to have a garage, because the 2 houses before that, I've never had a garage. It's always been carports. And I said, I need a bit of me space. And she's like, no, totally understand that. So this house that we have, we've been in for nearly 3 years, it's got a double garage. So I've been able to deck it out pretty well and put my tools in it and put, you know, a bit of gym equipment and things on the walls. And she was, you know, very, very accepting that I need a bit of my own man space, dad space. So things were going great there until Ava started doing gymnastics, and now my motorcycle is out under the carport, and there's a big one of those air track gymnastics mats stretched the whole way across the floor. Tara's got her treadmill in there. So, you know, they're starting to take over that space as well. So I've got to have a look at a new strategy to get some dad space happening, or a bit of a man cave now.
And does Tara have or want to have a lady space, you know, a lady cave? Does she have a place where she can get some me time?
Oh, look, the whole rest of the house is Tara's lady cave. And she accepts that. I've got a little corner in the wardrobe, which is about 25% of the whole wardrobe space, as you can imagine. So, look, I don't ask for much space. She can have all of it, and with the girls, but I just want my little corner of the world, which is my garage. So,
I'm sure I can hear all kinds of things going through some of the minds of our listeners, especially the mums out there. But we won't go any further down that way. So in your man cave, your space there, just quickly then, you have a motorcycle and you have your tools. Yeah. What things do you do for therapy or for your time when you've got it?
Okay, so I do try and get out on the bike. It was weekly, like, you know, for an hour on a weekend, if it, you know, with our schedule permits. Obviously, the weather of late just stuff that up for everyone. So, but that's one of my things I like to do. I like to get out there and put the get that air running through the helmet, that fresh air, clears the mind. It allows me to turn off a bit of testosterone as well. I'm a very safe rider and driver. I don't have a need for speed or anything, but it's just that freedom, I think, of being on the road. And then, as I said before, I do like to jog. Jogging is a good way for me to clear my head and burn off a few calories as well, but also a bit of testosterone and a bit of freedom. And I also work away a bit too. So, you know, I'm not stuck in a house full of 5 women 7 days a week, or 4 women 7 days a week. So I do get a bit of chance to work away and also just have a bit of me time. You know, if I like to read at night where I can. But yeah, they're sort of the main things that I can do, time permitting.
In my defence, I do want to say I wasn't suggesting that you felt stuck there with 4 women. That's not really what I was.
Oh, no, that's mate, you're everyone. When I let them know that my family arrangement, they all sort of like, oh, 3 girls and a wife. You know, they all sort of say the same thing. And look, I don't think anyone's thinking that I'm trapped in my life in this house,
being
tortured. But look, I think they understand that there's a lot of. I sort of say the joke that my life is a series of pink and emotions, and I think that sums up the dynamics of this house really well. You know, I've got dolls everywhere, I've got gym mats everywhere. It's just it's great. I wouldn't change it. It's very female orientated. Let's put it that way.
And I love what you said about, you know, you were looking forward to being a dad of daughters. I think there's, you know, that's very lovely, and I can relate. I think. That's very special. So, you were looking forward to being a dad, full stop, were you? Was this something that you always had wanted and hoped for?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As a kid, I always loved holding people's babies, and, you know, if I'd go somewhere with my mum to meet one of her friends' babies, I would just sit there and cuddle up the whole time. And yeah, being a dad was always in my plans. There was never any second thoughts or anything around that.
Yep. And how did you get on with your dad when you were growing up?
Yeah, good. I'd still do, but I had a good relationship with my dad. He's a mate as much as a dad too, and we still have that mate sort of relationship, which is great.
Mm. Let's talk about Willow for a second now. Now, what specific kind of CP have they diagnosed it as?
Okay, so she's been diagnosed with, I think technically she's diagnosed with quadriplegia because she's infected in all limbs.
Yep.
However, there's varying severities in all of her limbs. So it really affects her right side the most. So her right arm and hand, her hand's always clenched up and her sort of turned in, and so up to her elbow. And her right leg is a lot more affected than her left leg. So she walks in her own special way, like with a bit of a limp and from side to side with her hips a bit, her hips not entirely level. And the left hand is pretty well unaffected in terms of, you know, it functions pretty well, not like normally, like as it should, which is great because, look, if both her hands were really affected, that would just open up. It would be a lot more challenging for her. And one of her legs is actually a bit shorter than the other, so we have to have build-ups on her shoes and things like that. So, she's functional. She wears AFOs on her feet, which, you know, people would probably think like a splint sort of setup on her feet, just to help give her a bit of rigidity through her ankles and things, particularly on her right side because it's really not much strength there at all, and her foot turns in and her toes sort of curl up. But yeah, look, for all intents and purposes, you know, we've worked really hard, and particularly Tara, my wife, at pushing her from day one to be able to be as independent as possible. And we're achieving that currently. You know, we'll keep pushing hard. She'll keep having her therapies, and we'll advocate for her to be able to achieve and live as much of an independent life as possible within the realms of her functionality.
That's what we all.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One, isn't it? And so with her left hand, is she able to control a device, a computer, hold a pen? How functional is she there?
Yeah, so she can hold a pen and write. She can colour in, do those sorts of things. She can use her iPad. She'll pop her iPad up and use that hand. So basically every bit of movement or function or control is via her left hand. We always have encouraged her right hand as much as we can, and that's through all therapies and play and everything like that. But it's just not, it's more of a like if she's trying to catch a ball, she'll have a left hand sort of grabbing it and a right hand just sort of coming around or right arm coming around. So there isn't too much function as such in there in terms of assisting with grabbing or anything like that. And when she's actually concentrating, like drawing or colouring, her right hand goes into like a default clenching anyway. Mm. It's obviously the way that her brain sends those signals. So, yeah, the more she concentrates or the harder she works, the more her right hand and arm sort of actually tense up and curl up. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not on the athetoid end of the spectrum. It's more the spastic end of the spectrum, the high tone. On that
correct.
Side. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I just forgot what I was going to ask you. Something about that I wanted to ask you. We'll perhaps come back to it. Sure. So, well, let's talk then about her schooling. How has that been for her? I know she's only 7 going on 8, but how have you started that journey?
Yeah, well, with COVID, it's obviously made it a lot harder just in terms of routine. You know, the ASD side of her is very routine-based. So we were able to get her to start kindergarten last year. So we held her back a year because she did have her SDR surgery in St. Louis the year before, the year before COVID. So we got really lucky. We got that in and out and back before COVID hit. But that schooling's gone really well. Once we were able to get her comfortable with her teachers and her carer at school and the routine of it, it went really well. And then obviously COVID hit, which meant she spent the best part or most part of last year homeschooled, which sort of threw everything out again, which meant we almost started from scratch again this year. But she's been able to get used to it again this year, and she's absolutely thriving now, which is great.
And does she have the homeschooling obviously has, as you say, affected everything. COVID has affected everything. Does she have peers or friends around her age?
She does. So she's got a really, she only needs one friend if you ask Willow. So she's got her one friend at school who they're like inseparable at school, and her friend is just the, We feel extremely lucky that she's found this friend, and look, hopefully that friendship continues for forever. Fingers crossed.
That's great. Yeah,
but she's just such a kind, understanding little girl. And look, she doesn't have ASD or anything like that. She's just a super sweet, kind-hearted girl, and just accepts Willow for everything that she is. And she just thinks Willow's just the most amazing person in the world. So we feel really grateful that she's found her and they found each other, and she also has a beautiful family too. So we know that, you know, if Willow ever wants to go for a play over there, we'll be able to let her play there and she'll be supported and things like that. So at the moment, you know, fingers crossed that friendship can just keep blossoming, and that does help a lot because Willow, you know, if she trusts people and likes people, then she's able to be herself. It's when she feels that she, you know, if she feels threatened or anxious or anything, that's when she sort of goes into a shell, and that's when, you know, those ASD meltdowns and things will happen, and she sort of reverts to that baby talking and stuff. So you can always see when she gets triggered and changes, but no, so far with her friends, she's been able to lock in a really good one, and hopefully that continues.
That's wonderful, that story about the friend. That's just, you know, so much in that. How about your parents and Tara's parents? Are they within reach? Are they close by? Can they be part of all of the family life?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really lucky that we've got a close family network, including brothers and sisters and things too. So Tara's mum is probably about a 2-minute drive around the corner, and both of my parents are probably a 10-minute drive away. So we're very, very lucky to have them around and really really involved as much as they want to be and as much as we can let them, you know, with our schedule. So
They do want to be involved by the sound of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they want to be involved. Okay. They're always helping, you know, pick up the kids, or, you know, if we need a night out or whatever, they'll stay at one of the nens' houses. So, yeah, they're involved 100%. Yeah,
that's wonderful. You're in Gosford, is that right?
Yeah, I'm about 20 minutes north of Gosford. I'm in a suburb called Chidaway Bay, which is just about 10 minutes from the freeway, the M1 there. So, not far from Gosford, but closer to the entrance. Probably Gosford and entrance are the two points that a lot of people out of town would sort of recognise. But
yeah, okay. Well, it's got the potential to be a community kind of location, isn't it? Where, as you say, you can have friends and family and relatives and know each other and be close to each other. So that's great. How about medical access there, specialists and so on? You'd have to go to Newcastle, would you?
No, so Central Coast has very good health facilities, and we are quite a big population these days. So her paediatrician is in Gosford. Her other specialists, they are in Sydney. They're at Westmead Children's in Sydney, which is where we're heading today. But no, in terms of her ped is only 20 minutes away, and then all her therapists, physio, OTs and things, they're all local. So they're all sort of within a 20-minute radius.
Nice, great.
Yeah.
How about NDIS, Kirk? Have you had to and have been able to access some support there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we've been on NDIS since it first kicked in. So we've had a couple of, probably two instances where they were painful and just didn't know what they were talking about. But other than that, it's been okay. It's been pretty good. We've always had enough support budget to get through the year in terms of our daily activities. So, like OTs, sessions and that sort of thing. It's the day-to-day. And we've self-managed it basically from the first year we didn't self-manage, and then we went over and self-managed it and found that to be a much better way to do it, or much easier way to achieve things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And do you have support workers apart from, allied health professionals coming in and into the home?
Yeah, we do. Most of Willow's therapies are in or out of our house, so they're at the premises of that professional. We do have one of them, maybe her OT. I get so confused with the different titles of all the therapists that actually come and do an in-home one. But other than that, no, we don't have too much in-home support. We prefer to go out, to be honest.
Mm. Okay. Well, it's sounding like you've got a number of things in place that are really supportive and helpful. You've got the family, you've got some friends. Willow has this lovely friend. You've got some support through NDIS for the things that you need just for now. And, at her age, I guess there are challenges down the future that you don't have to think about just yet. So that's great. But, of course, none of this was what you expected and none of it was what you could plan for or prepare for. So as a dad who wanted daughters anyway and who loves to have daughters, how well prepared did you feel you were, and how well would you say you've coped well with the additional challenges of her additional needs?
Yeah, absolutely not. No, so look, I'm in a really good place now, and I have been for probably the last year, 18 months. Before that, though, I'd probably went through a 5-year journey of struggle, of depression, of keeping things in a facade of happiness, which was tiring. It was exhausting, and looking back on it now, it's really unfortunate that I put myself through that for so long.
Okay. Well, so you say depression. That's not clinical depression, but you were, what, in a dark place?
Yeah, so I got diagnosed with situational depression. Okay. And basically that stemmed back from Willow's birth and the trauma of that whole situation. And then it just sort of snowballed from there. So, you know, as the journey went on and I started to realize that it wasn't the journey that I'd envisioned for my life, and I started to realize that it was going to have a huge impact on the plans that we had made and how well we had, you know, both studied and worked hard to just, I mean, look, inverted commas, you know, a normal life as such. But, you know, I had to face that at some point, and I knew for a long time that I was struggling, and that struggle sort of just manifested into, you know, work stress, and everything just got on top of me until one day when I just basically had a breakdown and hit rock bottom, and then realized I needed to get some help.
Oh, really? Breakdown's a pretty strong word. Did you want to describe that? What happened, mate?
Yeah, so I guess what happened was I came home one day, or I was out at a function with Tara, and I had it in my head that I was done. You know, the issue, I had too many things going through my head that I was a burden on Tara and the kids. I felt like things were so broken that I couldn't fix them. I just thought the best thing to do is cut my losses here, leave the car and the kids, and just let them be happy without me bringing them down and me bringing this depressed, sad state to the house. So that was the direction I chose to go. So I basically told Tara that I didn't want to be with her anymore, and I wanted to do different things in my life. So I left for about a week. I went up and stayed at our work has a rental house, which I sometimes stay at during the week because I work away. So I went up there, and that was it for me. I was thought, this is the best thing to do, and I'll be able to be a great co-parent, and, you know, I'll continue to support Tara financially. She can have a house and all these things. So, and, you know, then my family and friends are sort of saying, look, this isn't the way you're thinking. It's not rational. You know, you may be depressed. This isn't you, and all those sorts of things. And to me, I think I'd been living, you know, the last 5 years of it, that I just believed that was me. That was the way that I was now, and that was the way I had to go. So in the end, Tara sort of asked me to have a chat with her at the end of that week, and just to hear her out, which I thought I definitely owed her the opportunity to do that. You know, I'd sort of just packed a bag and left without really much much reason for her. So, you know, it was pretty upsetting for her just because she didn't really understand what was going on. And in that chat we had, she sort of just, I don't know, she just, it's like she was reading my mind and all the things she was saying, and made me realize that, you know, she was here for me, and whatever I needed to try and feel better, that she was here for. So I decided that at that point I wasn't going to walk away. I had too much to lose to not try and see what was going on. So from there, I went to the doctors, told him what was happening, and he sort of said that, you know, from trauma, different people handle trauma differently. It could be, some people might think it's minor, some people might think it's major, but in any event, everyone's got their own journey. And sometimes during trauma and the lead on events from that, over however many years, that the imbalances in the brain and the, I think it's five different, not hormones, but there's a word for it. But anyway, he put me on an antidepressant and then booked me straight in to go and see a counsellor. And from there, I guess I've only gotten better and better, and it's been a bit of a road. And, you know, I had to try and get that trust back with Tara, that I wasn't just going to have a hard day and walk out again. And I think I've been able to build that trust back up. And probably one of the main decisions I made was to quit drinking. So I think I got onto the antidepressants around the December. And then a couple of years ago, and then I, in the March following, I said, I'm going to stop drinking. It wasn't doing anything for my recovery at all. It wasn't doing anything for the family life and them trying to realize that I was getting better. So I set myself a 12-month challenge from that March to not drink. And I completed that March 2 months ago. And in that year, I had the best year of my life, with hands down. You know, my relationship with Tara blossomed, the relationship with the girls, my patient levels have improved. Work-wise, I've been promoted, I'm kicking goals there, I've built great relationships, had great outcomes. So I've decided to just not go back to drinking at all now. I don't see any positives or anything good that could come out of going back to drinking. And I don't really miss it, to be honest. And I feel a lot healthier, a lot more energetic as well. So it's been a bit of a long journey, a couple of years now. But I think I've put myself in a position now where I can see the positives even associated around Willow's diagnosis. I'll never see or come to terms and say, you know, we're blessed or Willow's blessed to be born with disabilities. I don't buy that. It's not my way of thinking. I think that, you know, life's hard enough for everyone from day one anyway without having to be born with additional challenges. So I'll never be able to reconcile or accept that this is a good outcome. But I can now see that there is positives in her journey. I don't look at the future now and feel fear like I used to or worry. It's been a bit of a turnaround, that's for sure. It's been quite a journey, but proud of where I am and things are looking good.
Kirk, that was incredible, mate. You are obviously quite self-aware, and your honesty and your courage in being able to relate all of that has meant a lot to everyone who's listening right now. There are so many things there that you touched on that I'm sure resonated with so many of us. Thank you, mate. Thank you. And good on you for, you know, getting to where you are now. It just seems to me like the things that you were struggling with, you know, my suspicion is that when a person struggles and withdraws or attempts to remove themselves from the situation or whatever, it can seem selfish. And I'm sure there are some selfish aspects to it, but it isn't just selfish, is it? I mean, you talked about not wanting to be a burden, not wanting to make things worse because you couldn't help with the things that you felt, you know, you should be able to help with, all of those things, which obviously were not true, but they were part of your motivation. And again, I would just say I think that's a lovely quality and has probably served you and Tara well. But just overall, let me say, man to man, mate, and try not to get too emotional about it, that's a brilliant snapshot that you've given us. Thank you. You and Tara, you're okay? You're good?
Yeah, look, we're great. We're the best we've ever been. We're the most honest we've ever been. I think we're the most loving we've ever been, playful, all those things. We're in a great place now, a really great place, and it's amazing. We've been married 13 years this year. I think we got together when we were both 18. So what's that? I think 18 years. So 2004, we got together, and we can now look back on everything. Yeah, but now also know that we're in such a strong place now and looking forward to all the other things that come along, the challenges, the good times, all those things now. So now we're great.
Well, again, good on you. And good on you, Tara, for the steps you took to make sure that door didn't close and doing your best to, you know, see what could be done. And for the fact that both of you are doing this together as a team, and that so good on both of you. How are you with other blokes, Kirk? Have you got friends? You got some mates that you would talk to about things like this from time to time?
Yeah, I've got a good bunch of mates. I'm very lucky like that. I've got one mate in particular who had a journey before me with his son. He went through the whole emergency C-section experience. His son also has ASD as well. So he was my guy that I sort of was more honest to or spoke about. We always bounced things off each other. We always checked in with each other because we knew what it was like to live in a family or disability family. So we understood the challenges that no one else did, the ones that no one else can relate to because they don't live in that world. But even with him, I wasn't totally honest. You know, like I didn't tell him exactly how bad things felt inside. You know, and I only saw him a couple of weeks ago for dinner, and he apologized that he didn't see, you know, he didn't pick up on it and da da da. And, you know, I felt bad that he felt he had to apologize because, I mean, no one knew. Tara didn't know. My parents didn't know. You know, I did a really good job of wearing that mask while I was really sad inside. So, you know, he's a great, great mate. And we've only gotten stronger because we have that to share, that journey together. It's really being able to solidify our friendship in that way. It's got its own little special friendship to it that I don't have with some other guys that I've been mates with a lot longer. And then I have another bunch of mates who some of them I've known since I was in year two. You know, my best mate is, you know, my number one guy who I've, you know, love him like a brother. And then another bunch of mates who are sort of I've come to know because they might be friends. Tara's friends with their partners and, you know, we're all in this big group now. So now I've got a really good bunch of mates and, you know, two different sort of differing levels of friendship and relationship there.
It's incredible talking to you, Kirk. I have to say thank you again for this. Before we're getting close to probably our time, was there anything you wanted to touch on that we missed that you really think, you know, should be said at this stage?
Yeah, look, I think the main thing I look back on now and regret is the fact that I knew when I was struggling that I was struggling, and I always talk to myself and think, fuck, one day I'm going to have a breakdown. One day it's going to get too much. I need to take some action, and I just kept trying to think, no, it'll get better, and it just didn't get better, you know. So now that I am in the place that I am, and I went and got the professional help that I knew I needed for so long, and, you know, I needed to confront those things that I felt inside, I now look back on it and I have a regret that I let myself live for those years feeling that way. I think it really, really hit home when I was looking at some videos I think Tara might have put up on Instagram or something, of some things that Willow used to do when she was littler and some little milestones in that she hit. You know, it might have been taking a couple of steps or just playing or dancing, and they were really happy moments, but I don't remember them. And I was there, but I just don't remember them because I wasn't seeing the happiness in those moments. I was only seeing the sadness or the depressed side or the fear that, oh yeah, she's doing that at three, but what about when she gets to school and she gets bullied, all those sorts of things. So I think if I could give any advice to anyone, but particularly the dads out there, it's just if you know you're not feeling yourself or you're not dealing with the situation, it's just to talk to someone. It doesn't have to be your partner or a doctor. It could just be a mate that you trust. Just anyone, just even to get it off your chest. It may not mean you go and get help straight away, but it may mean that you're coming to talk, even to talk and vocalize those things that that someone else has, you got an ear, if someone else, you might be able to just call up when you're feeling a bit low. So yeah, that's probably the main thing, that the main message that I want to get out of this chat, is that if you are struggling, just don't live 5 years in regret, because I can't get those years back now, and I can only be the best dad I can now to the kids and best husband. But you know, that was it's a long time of someone's life or my life to know that I was living in a fake sort of life, showing a facade, and the knock-on effects that had to my work and everything as well, not dealing with things. It wasn't just that one aspect of, you know, Willow's diagnosis and that I was sad about that, but everything else was perfect. You know, it affected every aspect of my life. So pick up the phone, call your mate, I don't know, even go out and punch the shit out of a punching bag. Do something to try and deal with what you're feeling inside. But I think at the end of the day, at some point, you need to get professional help to try and sort it out. And it's amazing that I'd struggled for 5 years, but it really only took about 6 months or probably less than 6 months before I went, once I got the help and I was on the meds and I quit drinking, that I went, fuck, I feel great. I didn't think I could ever feel like this again. You know, I feel like the 15-year-old I was, riding around with my mates after school, no responsibilities, carefree, and just living life and loving it and feeling positive about everything. So, yeah, I think that's probably the main thing I want people to realize, that you may feel like shit, but you can feel good again. And once you do, you'll just go from strength to strength.
I'm just sitting here thinking what we might give this episode as a title, and one thought that occurred to me was punch the shit out of a punching bag or yep. Fuck, I feel great.
Yeah, look, 100%. I think, look, one thing in the message and now being able to talk to people, and I do the same thing at work now. So I was open with my general manager at work about a lot of things and the work at that point, because I work in construction, so it's an industry, you know, of lots of suicide and lots of marriage breakdowns and things like that. And once I told him about it, and the company's trying to go in that direction of trying to get a lot more support from people, which all companies are now, they've sort of seen that, you know, work does add to people's stress, particularly in construction. And so he asked me to be the chairperson of the wellbeing group. So I run a group of seven now to come up with strategies and implement strategies and things for the company. We're a nationwide construction company too, so we're a reasonable size. So I think the fact that I was able to be honest with him, he gave me the responsibility of being able to continue with my journey, because it's helping my journey as well. Talking about it to other people helps my journey, helps me continue to grow and realize that, you know, I don't think there's a magical cure for the way I felt. Yes, I was diagnosed with being depressed, but that's the situations around that. They're always going to be there. It's part of my life now. It's how I manage them and how I perceive them. And I think perspective's everything in this. But to be able to talk to other people, to be able to talk on this podcast, to try and now emphasize that if I think people are just not seeming themselves, that I get on the phone or I flick them a text message going, hey, you seem a bit down, are you okay? Whether they write back or not, that's up to them. But I think, you know, by trying to share the story, I'm actually helping others but also helping myself. So I want my message to be blunt. I don't need it sugarcoated or anything. I think the podcast should have a name like that. I think it needs a name that dads and that look at it and go, well, this could be an interesting thing to hear. They're swearing in the title. This title's pretty raw. I wonder what this is about. So, yeah, I think, mate, pick whatever fun you think works. But I think punching the fuck out of a punching bag probably sounds pretty good.
Mate, this has been just such a pleasure. I you're a bloody good dad, and I admire you as a bloke as well, a dad to dad. Thank you so much for talking to us. You've done a lot of good by what you've said and your rawness, your honesty, your wisdom, your courage. There are people who've heard this now who are in a different place than they were when they started. So thanks, Kirk. It's been great talking to you.
No, I appreciate your time, and thank you for the kind words, and mate, thanks for the podcast, doing great things, and let's hope we can continue on the journey and try and make people realise that, you know, the current state of mind can change and things can only get better if you give them the chance to.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.